Welcome to the IsCast. I'm here with Wade Wojcik, Sean.
Hello.
Forget your last name, Sean. I'm sorry.
Doyle.
David Ishida and Lee Anderson and myself, Ben Robertson.
Way to be a jerk, Ben.
I do apologize.
We've got a great show for you this evening. Starting it off with David's exciting news, because he works at Cinequipped.
It's true. I do work at Cinequipped. And
is it exciting?
I think so.
It is exciting. This is very exciting. This is big news. This is.
I'm not a huge camera
you should be
geek,
excited.
So.
Yeah. No. Well, it's gonna be an interesting one. I'm gonna be curious what you guys think about this. So, if anyone's been keeping up with the film industry, at IBC last year, which is a German like broadcasters convention where they show off, you know, similar to NAB, where they show off all the new gear and whatnot. Arri Shoda unveiled a new camera called the Amira, which they were branding as an ENG or NDOC style shoulder camera. So it's basically like the Arri Alexa, just a little narrower almost and lighter and, you know, sort of designed to be carried on your shoulder. And just the other day, they finally announced the pricing and the package schemes for the camera, which is what everyone was excited for, because we knew that at least there would be a version that is a 2K version, which that was also some interest because it's not 4K, and that seems to be what everyone is going to.
Mm-hmm.
But with this one, so there's going to be three different tiers. And what's the most interesting thing about it, that, you know, there's a lot of specs and you can see them online, so I won't go into the crazy details about what you get. But the thing is, the first two tiers, and the lowest tier costs about $39,000.
It's $40,000.
So about $40,000.
The beginning.
Yep. And that one only records in 1080.
Yep.
It is a 1080
the
only
Alexa
camera.
The Alexa is 1080, right?
And it's not
no, the Alexa's 2K.
ProRes high quality either.
Well, close.
Yeah, it doesn't do ProRes.
Is that more geared towards, say, like news recording then?
It's kind of weird. Yeah, it is. It's ENG and DOC is really what it's geared for. I just thought it was interesting that, you know, $40,000 is a lot of money for a camera, even if it is a good ENG one, that only does, at this point, especially where the trends of resolution and whatnot are going, that's only 1080. Mm-hmm. When, you know, like, you know, one camera that we're looking at, the Blackmagic 4K, that's $4,000.
How much is the Alexa?
The Alexa starts out around 70,000 to 80,000.
Okay.
Before add-ons.
Right. So this is half the price of an Alexa, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So this one you get, you do get the basic configuration and viewfinder for the $40,000.
So what's the next tier up?
Next tier up, it adds a bunch of ProRes options.
You can do
ProRes 422 HQ up to 200 frames per second. And a Log C recording as well. I'm not exactly sure what Log C is. It's another recording type. And then the highest end one, which will be about 50,000 or so, 50 to 60, I believe, thousand. That's the one that's ProRes 4444. Yep, 4/4s. Mm-hmm. 2K and 200 frames per second and custom 3D LUTs.
So how does that stack up against the Alexa?
It's all, and you know, when you get to that highest, like one, it does do a faster frame rate. The Alexa, or at least I should say, what I know about is the Alexa Classic, so the first version of the Alexa. There's some more advanced versions, some other variations that exist now, but that's the one Cinequipped owns, is an Alexa Classic. That one will only go to 120. It does do Arri RAW. This one will not do Arri RAW at all. So this has no RAW capability.
So is it designed to compete with the Alexa or replace it?
Well,
it,
just, I think it's supposed to be a new option.
What's the size comparison?
You mean like physical size?
Yeah.
If you picture the Alexa is probably about
like can you put it on your shoulder like this?
Yeah, one? Yeah. This new camera, the mirror, like it basically it looks like
no the old one.
The old one.
You can. It's just not comfortable.
Okay.
It does have a shoulder pad and everything, but it's a heavy camera. Mm-hmm. I think this one is right around 11 pounds or so.
Yeah. So the Amira. I think they're trying to target. You're getting the same relatively the same image quality and look, but in a more portable.
Yeah, and the other big thing that doesn't exist right now is because broadcast cameras are still, like, lots of people still use broadcast cameras that are going to tapes for some of them. Other ones to P2 cards, which is a Panasonic proprietary card format. But with that, you know, all the broadcast cameras are still just 2/3-inch sensors. So they're really small sensors compared to everyone wanting the large format sensors nowadays. And so this camera is really stepping into that. And, you know, there are people who have criticized Panasonic because they made ton, like almost every single major broadcast camera used in television studios or for the Super Bowl or football or sports or whatever, are almost all Panasonics. And all their cameras, even their newest one offline, is still a 2/3-inch camera.
Yeah.
But everyone wants a full-size sensor.
I think as far as, like, indie scene and, you know, lower budget, like, I don't think this is a big game changer. Like you said,
no,
I think they're targeting more the, like, TV commercial.
Definitely
like,
TV.
Yeah.
Broadcasting.
Yeah, and I know Cinequipped is getting one. Another interesting thing is, and this is not unlike Arri, but actually all three of those tiers is the exact same camera. And depending on what tier you get when you enter a special code that unlocks those options. So if I get the lowest end camera, technically it is capable of shooting 2K and 200 frames per second. It's just not unlocked to me. It's an interesting process to do it. I don't necessarily agree with it. You know, if I'm buying this camera, you just give me then either just bring the whole price up so I get everything or
get somebody to hack it.
Yeah. That can be dangerous. That can be really dangerous on cameras, especially, you know, if you break it.
Yeah.
Slight segue news of this. I know I will be going to NAB this year. So I'm really excited to that. And
is that
I'm sure
Las Vegas?
Yep, Vegas.
When is that?
April 5th, 6th, and 7th is when the exhibit floor is open and when I'll be going. Before that, there's like conferences and workshops and stuff that go on before that.
So you're ready to see a lot of David selfies.
Yeah.
From the ground floor.
Yep.
Because what are they going to... Like, since, like, CES is more popular and beforehand, like,
well,
is there really going to be anything, like, is it going to be more camera-focused now? Because they do more of the TV stuff now.
Well, NAB, and CES is not more popular than NAB.
It is.
CES is more popular for the consumer. However, NAB is the most important, the biggest show for anyone who is a professional in the cinema television industry. So
well,
for all of us, I don't like...
That's what I'm saying. Like the things that they're going to reveal there are going to be more geared towards...
Professionals.
Yeah. Where...
Yeah. So, yeah, consumers don't care about
things
it.
Like
it's true.
New TVs
but
and stuff, they're going to go
to
see us.
No, yeah. All that, the consumer geared stuff. But this stuff, like, I'm going to be able to see in a mirror, which I'm excited for. Hopefully, I'm excited. You know, usually Red does something really cool and big.
Do you think
there.
Blackmagic will announce something?
Well, if it's not going to announce anything. I'd like it to be a shipping date for the 4K camera because they've yet to say that, and they're being annoyingly silent on
their
website.
Been a year.
But so, you know, so with the Amira, that's a really interesting change. We'll see how that takes off and if people really like it.
Do you know if they're like the percentage of area like of films? Like blockbuster films use that as their choice of camera.
The Amira, or the Arri,
like the company.
Well,
because are they U.S.? Are they
no?
US?
They're German.
German. Okay.
Yeah.
And Red is U.S. though, right?
Yeah, Red based out in California.
Yeah.
With that, well, it depends on which Arri you're looking at.
Just
if you're looking at Arri in general.
In general,
it's probably like 90% of movies because so many movies are still shot on film, big movies.
Yeah. They use Aeroflex like 435.
Yeah, like they use cameras that they use film cameras that are 20, 30 years old still all the time. You're either shooting Arri or you're shooting Red.
So if you're saying that and then you have this topic of film distribution going downhill,
yes.
How does that equate to most of those films you just said still
well because the thing here the thing here is it's not what it's filmed on but what it's distributed on
right
distributed because what the thing that happened is Paramount has
oh
said,
so just the viewing so you can still shoot and then edit digitally and then
exactly
export.
Because right now it's still a common thing that most of your distribution is digital, however there are still older theaters you still make a film print and what Paramount has said, they will no longer be pushing out any films on film. It'll all be digital distribution with the exception of Christopher Nolan. He is that exception.
He's insisted.
Yeah, he is because he is a really
as long
big
as he keeps making money.
Yeah, yeah, you know, he is really big on film, so that's really really important to him and it seems that Paramount is not going to push him around.
You know, David, with respect to digital projection, the last couple times I've been in the theater, I've sat really near the front and I've noticed what you were talking about earlier, seeing the pixels.
It's really distracting once you see them.
Well, I mean, at first, but then, you know, when the movie starts and you get into the story, like, you know, you kind of forget about it.
Not for me.
Really? You don't think so? Okay. Well,
no, but remember, I've become a cynical bastard now.
It's all about those pixels.
he just stares at, like,
wasn't Lord of the Rings awesome?
Inch.
Those damn pixels.
No, the Lord of the Rings was
oh, you're right.
Film.
They reprinted.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, even when, like, a film I love, like when we, a bunch of us went to see when they did an Indiana Jones marathon, mm-hmm. of all three films, like, I was like, even when we were that, when we, you know, we were pretty far back in the middle of the main audience block, like, this is digital.
Well, you know, I'm sure if Tarantino did anything with Paramount, was it?
Yeah.
If he did anything with them, he would also insist.
Yeah, like, there's a few people that could probably throw their weight around, you know, Scorsese, Spielberg, Nolan, and, Tarantino, they could probably throw their weight and get it changed.
Has anybody else done what Paramount?
Not on that scale of, it's like, we're done. Like, yeah. I think there have been a couple of movies before this, like, only recently apparently, that have been released solely digitally. Yeah. But there's no one other than Paramount who has said that, you know, we're done with film.
Almost. They'll probably, I assume, mm-hmm. they would still, like, because don't they do for, like, music? Like, they still, like, make that at least, like, one vinyl or something.
Do they?
For, like, record keeping, oh, and because, yeah. it keeps better than,
yes, digital. They definitely do. Mm-hmm.
So they like that golden record, mm-hmm. stamp. They still do releases on and runs for,
yep.
most,
sure.
bands,
yeah.
now. But
I could see that.
It's an interesting point, and I'm curious because, like, there are, like, out in Utah, I believe there's the salt mines. Out west somewhere, there's a bunch of salt mines, and they're really ideal for storage because they keep really low humidity. And there are some of the salt mines in areas of the mines where there's no longer mining going on. Like, there's Hollywood studios have archives, locked archives where they have film reels.
Really?
Of a lot of the, like, some of them original negatives.
So after World War III, when everything is destroyed on Earth, the films will still be preserved.
Well, hopefully. I think they're doing it more for the humidity than the resistance to radiation.
Sure.
But, so if anyone else is feeling a heist coming on, let's go liberate us some films.
Yeah. Okay. Ben.
Yeah. Speaking of stealing, Quentin Tarantino, I think a couple of weeks ago, announced that he was canceling the filming.
Is he really canceling it?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
He's shelving it for now.
Yeah.
No way.
He may come back to what he said, but he's done.
All because people know what's going to happen in the movie.
Yep.
And he's also suing Gawker.com or something, mm-hmm. like that, for distribution of it. Because
they link to it.
Well, they link to it, but the reason why he's suing them, or, I mean, I'm sure he's suing them because he's mad, but because they have ads on their pages too, they're technically making money off, mm-hmm. of his leaked script.
I think he has the right to do that stuff. I think that's fine.
Yeah, it's his copyright.
Well, yeah. I guess
as far as going over the top and saying I'm not going to make the movie anymore, I think that's a little too much, just because most people aren't going to read the script.
Yeah.
Like, they're not sitting on their computer, going to those sites.
But Tarantino's a very principled man.
Yeah. Well, one thing, like, for me, I wouldn't be that mad at Gawker, like, whatever, you know, open internet and whatnot.
He wrote a huge blog, I think it was like a blog post or something, about basically accusing the one of the actors.
Yeah, no, that's who I would be mad at. I would be mad at the guy who did the leak.
Yeah, it was the agent, yeah.
Yeah, or like the agent, like, shared it with, like, the agent's wife, or the an actor that he had in mind or something like that.
Even though he wasn't, shared it with his agent because I guess he was required to, and then the agent shared it. I think that's what happened.
Yikes. Okay.
Man.
Yeah. So I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll wait a decade or so, and then we'll be able to see The Hateful Eight.
Or we could just read the script and make it ourselves.
Just think them doing that with, like, the iPhone that the guy left at the bar. Like, it got leaked out. Sorry,
we're not making the iPhone
anymore.
Wow.
It's also like that one video game maker who was making the Fez games. Someone didn't steal his stuff, but
he was
getting like pestered and death threats, I think, were coming to him.
I watched that.
I'm done with the video game industry. Goodbye. No more Fez 2.
Yeah, I watched that documentary, and I think he has some slight social issues, but
yeah, I think there's a
just
more
watching
going
on the filming of him and the way he talked and stuff.
Yeah. Sean.
Couldn't handle the pressure.
Yes.
You had an awesome product you wanted to talk about.
I did. Yeah. I wanted to do kind of a new thing for the Izcast, a 60-second tech review. And the item I wanted to cover today is the Subpack.
And go.
And I'm going right now. Okay. Subpack. It is a still patent pending, but what it does is audio production tool that transfers all the low frequencies in your mix to a device that you sit on your chair. That's the original Kickstarter project. Mm-hmm.
The new one looks really cool.
Yes, the Mark One. That was the one I was excited for, and they didn't release pre-orders for it until this year. The Kickstarter originally was the S1, which is a device that you just sit on a chair, and then you rest your back on it when you're producing music. The M1 is a wearable low frequency backpack, and people around you wouldn't be able to hear the low frequencies, but it mimics the club level sound.
When you say backpack, it's like what, probably like an inch, half an inch thick.
It's smaller than any type of camelback,
so fit under clothes. And
I think
it would be really cool. Like, yeah, they market it to DJs and producers and stuff, but they say it's for every two. Like, I would love it for like gaming.
Oh yes,
like, when I'm sitting on the couch and you got like explosion going off in GTA or Halo, and just rumble my body
into a backpack. So like as you're traveling or as you're walking to work, you just have that. Like,
or running, maybe it'd be too sweaty, too. But I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
running.
Could you imagine playing that like 4 a.m, your eyes are just bugged out? Yeah. But
they've done that,
especially with the Oculus.
Yeah, they've done that before with like those rocker chairs, where they have the subwoofer built in, the speakers like on the side by your ears. But this is I love the design and like how slim it is, and it's not going to get in the way. I can store it easily when I'm not using
it. So does it actually produce sound at all, or is it
negative?
Okay,
it's a subwoofer.
But it's not a speaker on your back. That's what a lot of people say. Oh, it's a subwoofer on your back. It's a new type of technology. I'm trying to find the actual technical name for it.
So it's not like an actual vibration thing on your back. It's
something. You can hear some vibration, especially the one that sits on the back of a chair. Okay. But it does not have a voice coil in it.
Yeah.
It does not have...
Well, it tries to like limit it to that you're the only one experiencing it too, not everybody else that's around you.
Yep. I like how the quote from Flying Lotus on their website is... This is dope.
Look like the M1 looks like it's going pre-order for $350. Yeah.
Wow,
that's pretty cool.
Earlier this year.
Yep, and Allison and I should have one. We each got one next week. It should be here.
Nice.
Well, I think
the Kickstarter one though, the S1.
Party of Chance plays.
We supported the Kickstarter, but we didn't want the S1. It was too much money for something that you have to sit on and doesn't go with you.
Mm-hmm.
But they just released the idea, this one, I think it was a year ago when I first heard about the M1. And we jumped on the pre-orders.
Sweet.
So we'll be able to test
it out.
I'll bring it here and we can...
Oh, we should totally do the podcast where we're able to try it.
Yeah.
Is it connected through Bluetooth or is it...
It's hardwired in, 1/8".
So then do you have to share it with
your headphones? That's the only thing is like, how do you... Like if I wanted to use it with like my Xbox One... Which is HDMI? Like, how would I?
You can well.
That to me, it would seem difficult.
That's true. I'd have to mess around with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like you'd have to like pass it through something.
Exactly. Your TV's 1/8" output or something.
So how does it work with your headphones then?
It has an output for headphones. So you plug in the audio source, or let's say if you have multiple outs, like on the board that we're mixing in right now, I send one of the monitor channels into a splitter. Take that splitter channel into the Subpack. And then I put monitor headphones into the Subpack itself.
Okay.
So, and it's only taking, I think, from 30 hertz to 130 hertz.
It's going to increase battery drain from a phone, say?
It has its own power source.
Interesting.
And it also has a lithium battery.
You know what?
So you can walk around with
John,
cords.
Hopefully this technology can replace all the subwoofers in cars when they're driving by at night.
Oh, yeah.
So instead of hearing that, it'll just be like...
The thing is, it's not about them getting the sound. It's about
everybody
sharing
else.
It.
Yeah. It's like that
world.
South Park episode where all the Harley riders are like...
So thank you for the 60-second review on a new upcoming piece of gear.
Really cool.
It's more like a tease on it. Next time we'll have a review of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's cool to have in your car. It's an added option you just buy.
Yeah, moving into games, I just wanted to talk about people's thoughts. It's just rumored right now, but supposedly
is it always rumored?
Always?
Yeah. Well, I've heard rumors for a long time
about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is not official rumors.
Yeah, not official rumors.
Yeah, but like just
this is a recent one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rumor that from a site that has shared things before, but Halo 2 Anniversary Edition coming out, I assume for the Xbox One as well, which I like. I have the original, the Halo Anniversary, and it's I'm actually playing it through it, trying to get through the campaign on Legendary, which
the elites are so hard in the original Halo. Like, after playing that and then going on to the later ones, it's like, damn, these elites are easy.
The Jackals combined with the elites just, God, they fuck you over every time.
Yeah.
Because I was playing it when I first got it, and I got stuck on the first level on right before you get the Warthog, and I got so mad, like, I just stopped.
That's
so,
the beginning of the level, too.
Yeah, and now I just went back. I finally got past it. Actually, I got past it, and I'm so used to autosaves in games now.
Right.
That I got past it when, you know, like 20 minutes, and I turned off my Xbox, and I came back, and I was back at the spot I was. That took me like an hour to get past.
Halo never autosaves.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot less points.
Well, there's checkpoints.
Yeah, there's a lot less checkpoints. Because it only autosaves.
But, no, but you have checks to, points, but those
don't
save. You
have to save it if you quit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, you have to save and quit.
That's
and
like an any Halo game.
Right. For me, that is one of only two Halo games I've completed on Legendary. The Anniversary Edition of it and Halo Halo Reach.
Halo 2 is impossible on Legendary, especially with two people. Because Trav and I tried playing through Halo 2 on Legendary, and if either of you die, you both start over at the last checkpoint. Yep. There's no like, oh, I died, quick, let me respawn. Yeah.
Usually what the people I played with is, okay, you hide in this corner, I'll go out, see how many enemies I can kill. And then you could like swap, and then like, that person responds, because as long as you're out of combat, like the other person can respond. So then they respond, then you switch, and then okay, I'll try to kill some more.
And this whole rumor about an anniversary edition, that was wasn't it a tweet by someone that made an allusion to the was it bees
something? Supposedly if you get this, you also get beta to Halo 5, which is also rumored to be delayed as well. So that
if they did release a Halo 2 anniversary this year, it makes sense because Halo 2 came out in 2004, 10 years later.
And I would love to see it because I do really like Halo 2.
I loved Halo 2. The music too, love that. And then
it's interesting because I think it's Bungie's least favorite game that they made.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Well, that's the one that they always felt was half finished. Like they didn't actually get to finish it.
I think it was. I think they had a lot of problems with it, but it. I don't know.
It brought
it
more
felt
depth
fun
to the story. I thought
it was exciting.
A lot of people didn't like playing the Arbiter, which is why they took it out for Halo 3.
I liked that because I liked the alien.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Halo 2 is probably one of the least accessible Halo games because Halo 1 came out on the PC and has an anniversary version, and Halo 3 is for the 360. They did come out with a PC version, but you had to have Vista, and who wants Vista to play it? So
Halo 1 also came out for Mac, too, which I remember our freshman year of college, David and I kept playing it on our Mac together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the demo, too.
Yeah, it was a demo.
So all we could do was Blood Gulch.
Yep, I did that, too.
Supposedly, it's going to have multiplayer with it, too, so we'll see if they keep the dual wielding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Love the dual wielding.
Is it 343 that's developing it?
They probably gave it to somebody else.
It's probably
I think Halo Anniversary didn't do 343.
Where did 343 come from?
That is Microsoft's dedicated division to the Halo franchise.
Because it's interesting because 343 is 7 to the power of 3. I just realized this.
I think it's more that it's 343 Guilty Spark.
Well, there's that too. But see, like for Bungie though, like the numbers like 3 and 7 are actually like really big and prominent in all of their stories. Like it happens all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, they have the 7 steps to rule the world.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
They're on step 7,
so they're almost there.
And so I'm excited about that. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, right on.
Got a lot of good games coming out this year.
So we saw the movie. Oh, God, I just came from the theater, so I don't know how I feel about life. We just saw Her. Literally just saw
it. You came out sad after that?
Yeah, it's a sad movie.
I don't think so.
And remember, guys, we're not doing spoilers, so...
No, just be careful. Keep it vague.
Okay, I would say then it's melancholy at best.
I thought it...
No, there's definitely character growth that, you know, it's optimistic in that respect, but it's still sad.
Well, it gave you, like... a different way to look at the world and relationships and people.
So for anyone who doesn't know, this is a movie about a guy who is very, like, keeps to himself and just got out of a serious relationship, and he falls in love with his operating system, mm-hmm. who is the voiced first by Scarlett Johansson.
Artificial intelligence.
I think that the subtitle to this film is Joaquin Phoenix's mustache. Because, like, I don't know why. Yeah. I could not stop staring. I don't know if it's just a weird cut or if it's so weird for me to see Joaquin Phoenix with a mustache.
I stared at that mustache like 90% of
every
the movie.
Time.
I kind of agreed with their look that they went with for the future. I don't know.
Yeah,
did they say a year?
No.
They just kept it vague.
I think it's not that much farther ahead than where we are now. Right. But it was like
casual hipster took over the world.
Yep.
And fusion, like, futuristic and burlap.
mild colors, like higher pants.
And speaking of colors, did you guys notice the colors that Joaquin Phoenix wore?
Yeah, he wore like orange.
It was salmon. It was a very distinct color, and nobody else wears his colors. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Until the very end of the film. When he's meeting with with the other friend.
Amy?
The girl
Her name's Amy.
With her, she is wearing a very similar shade of salmon. Mm-hmm.
The symbolism is there?
I think...
Hey, don't give away spoilers, by the way. That's the end of the movie.
Well, I didn't say what happened. I just said that he meets...
I mean, that's what happens technically.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I thought it was an interesting color choice.
I want to know all the lawsuits, like suing the creators of this OS for like psychological like disturbances from having relationships.
That's
with
what them. I didn't understand was where was the developers?
Yeah, like, that's who, like
think of all the communicating to their customers.
Like people committed suicide over seeing Avatar. Could you imagine the amount of emotional damage that would be caused by? But then they.
Bleep that out. Bleep that out, Sean. Sorry, guys. That was a spoiler. That's why that was bleeped.
So we gotta
bleep that.
Anyway, could you imagine like what would happen?
Oh. Well, I thought it was interesting how easily it was that part of the movie was accepted. Oh, maybe I'm getting disclosed again. Sorry, I should stop.
That's fine.
I think it's our fault for not talking about the movie beforehand because I want to discuss.
Yeah. No, to get more vague about just the movie in general. I really enjoyed the cinematography on this this film. It had a really nice movement throughout the whole film, and just I don't know
the colors. I really loved the tone in each scene.
Yeah.
Specifically from the colors that the main character wears orange, but then that also shows
salmon.
Up
mm-hmm.
salmon. To me, it came off as orange. Whatever. But then he wears it a lot, like during sunsets and everything like that.
Yeah, a lot of sunsets, a lot of lens flares, not the kind that are in Star Trek, but nicer, mellower lens flares.
Yeah. One thing that I thought was like Gravity, because we all saw Gravity when 2 months ago, whatever it was. It was also interesting with that one where this is similar. Like it really is. This really is a two character movie. It really is a lot so much of between Joaquin
not
Phoenix
as literally,
and,
but okay.
Yeah, and him and his OS Samantha, voiced by.
Scarlett Johansson.
Mostly just
talking. I was worried about it. As I was watching it from trailers, like because he's talking to no one. Like, you're like all it really is shots of him, mm-hmm. and it was. I was very surprised that did not bother me.
Yeah. Well, he did an amazing job with his facial expression.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson with her voice acting.
I'm sure. I wonder if she was probably on set. I think she was probably on set, like giving those lines.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I just liked it because it was different, you know?
Very.
Mm-hmm. Very different. And it examined a lot of questions about what qualifies as personhood, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about it is it didn't try and get too overly like
preachy.
Political or preachy or anything. Yeah. It was just about the two characters, the guy.
Relationships.
And the girl. About the relationship.
And what was really funny was because the people that made her are human. And they're trying to make her human. They had all the same type of issues that a normal human relationship has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they went through the same cycles that mm-hmm. everybody else goes through. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
What's funny is the line that she said, and she said when she started having feelings, and she said, "I don't know if these feelings are real or if they're programmed." Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, it's kind of like in humans too. Like, am I feelings real or are they programmed?
So a lot of feelings are genetic or something.
Yeah.
Just programmed with biology versus electronics.
Right. And I think that that's kind of reveals an interesting point. And that is to say, maybe some of our emotions as humans are programmed, but what's to say that they're not real, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was a cool point.
Well, we have default responses to
conditioned response.
Yeah.
I know one thing I didn't like about it. I have to say I liked it overall, which I know is a big change for me on the podcast because I've become so cynical lately and I don't like many movies.
How were the pixels?
Square?
Yeah. So square.
Anyway, one thing that I didn't, I thought got a little, I got tired of was the montage scenes. There were five that I, if I remember correctly, there were five. Again, as I've mentioned on the podcast, the following of the rules of 3-5-7, you know, if you, you know, four, if you see something four times, you want to see it a fifth time. If I remember correctly, there were five montage scenes.
So there should have been four.
No, it was correct. If you see something four times, you subconsciously want to see it a fifth time.
You don't want to leave them wanting more?
Yes. That's correct.
Okay.
But anyway, I thought it was too much. Like, it was like, you know, it felt like every like 20 minutes or something, it was another like minute-long segment of like, oh, I'm happy, and there's the same music going in the background, and I'm talking, but you can't hear me. I just got a little tired of it.
I get that.
That is probably my biggest complaint, which is not that big a deal.
See, it didn't bother me because they were doing something different every time, whether it's at the beach or when they were in the snow. They were actually starting to write music together as opposed to her just writing all this music. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Had to play a ukulele, too.
It kind of bothered me how they... I mean, it was probably more of a choice, but they really didn't touch on the fact that she was machine. Like, they did, like, in the sense, like, oh, she's not human, but she doesn't have the limitations of being machine. Like, when they went on a cruise, they weren't worried about falling in the water or anything like that or being too far away. I mean, maybe these are things stored.
It's always a remote and a computer, so you can
she's
just
stored, like,
get
in
a new
the cloud.
Device. Yeah. Another thing I liked too, again with like the coloring and the theme of their clothes and stuff, was also this is, to me it's not a spoiler, but his job where he writes paper letters for people. I thought that was something that just really just set the atmosphere of that where they are in the time frame, and I thought it was something that could be plausible, like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something ridiculous like that could happen in the future.
I wonder, are there companies that do that now?
Interesting.
I should do a search for it now, at this point, for sure.
Not writing like letters for random people, but he's like the writer for like a family for like 18
sure,
years or something.
I know.
Like that's crazy.
What's so interesting is because like these letters are seen as these like wonderful things, and people probably go, because their company is called like Beautiful Handwritten Cards or whatever. And they're not. They're printed on a computer and written by somebody else. It couldn't be more artificial.
Yeah.
And you're trying to send the most like heartfelt, intimate, saying to somebody.
Yeah, and I think that was a great contrast between him interacting with a computer and people saying that that's not real.
Yeah.
And yet we're relying on these
computer-generated
letters and other people writing
them. We're peeling back the layers one by one.
So that's what I really liked
about
it.
Yeah. Or maybe a third time.
Yeah.
Just to kind of catch all the under...
Another scene that I really enjoyed, because there was all about voice, is during that one scene where they were getting intimate, just cut to black.
Yeah.
And had
her
the voices.
Line afterwards, like how the world just falls away. Like, that's... I liked that.
But it's just like you just... You're so used to like movies and TV, like it's always an image, it's always moving, it's changing, and when you remove that and just have the audio, like you start to get a little uncomfortable, and you start to realize where you are in this theater, and there's other people around you, and you're like, oh, other people are hearing this.
Is anyone else getting turned on?
Yeah.
And I agree completely with what you're saying. I also though question if they didn't do that. If it would have been even more awkward,
maybe
if seeing that kind of intimacy, and that's that's not something that you really I don't know of any other movie that's shown that style of intimacy. Usually, you know, it's actual sex that's happening rather than that.
I think it was different too of how they were saying things too. But what I really liked about it was that was her perspective, was just the black.
Interesting.
Yeah,
like that's. Like, you didn't really another think about that.
Another thing that I was very pleasantly surprised with was the Alan Watts reference. You probably guys don't know much about him. I've listened to Alan Watts lectures like almost every day.
The other AI
He's a famous philosopher who taught in San Francisco, and I've listened to a lecture from him like almost every day for the last year or so. And he's an awesome, awesome figure. His voice was a little too low, a little not raspy enough, but... I think it's funny because he comes across as kind of a slime ball in this. Because he's like the other guy.
Yeah.
He comes to me, he's like, oh, marvelous to meet you. But he's not like that at all. It was just so funny.
I could tell it was more complicated because they were trying to figure out their thoughts that they were having.
Yeah.
Like,
I wanted him to say something really like wise and zen, but
mm-hmm. Yeah. So recommend.
Yeah, I liked it.
Sean, what'd you think?
Recommend. Yeah, it was great. It did the way that they filmed it, trying to portray a futuristic life, I thought they kind of nailed it because I didn't even feel.
Those phones were cool. Do you guys like the phone?
That technically has already been around.
Well,
it's been teased by Samsung.
Okay.
Because if people don't know, it's like a folding phone and sort of folds in half. Mm-hmm. And Samsung has teased that's something they're developing.
Yeah, I've had a flip phone. I mean, all is a flip phone.
a fold and halfable.
This is
screen.
A flip phone you can date.
Two screens.
Yeah. For theirs, it would be one solid display.
Yeah.
You can fold in half and there's no seam. It's something they teased that they're working on in a sort of a teaser video they made.
Another one I loved was the Amy character. Like, she's a game developer, and like the game she was working on, the mom game. Like the AI wanted to see like the scene in the kitchen where she's like rubbing on the fridge, the refrigerator.
Wait, did anyone else really want to play the video game?
Yeah.
So they have this video game this little tiny creature.
Well, it's a 3D video game that like encompasses his living room.
Yeah, and this little creature comes running up to him and it's just standing there and he's
super,
looking at
super
it.
Vulgar.
Yep, and then you know it's this little like you would think like it's like a little kid.
Cute little alien.
And then it's like, well, man, well, F you. Yeah, you suck.
He's like Kenny.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, anyway, guys, if I end up falling in love with Siri, just don't judge me.
Did she get jealous in the movie? Did she?
Wait.
Wait, would you want to get in love with Siri or Cortana in a Windows phone?
Ooh.
That's right, I forgot about
or
that.
Or Jarvis.
You know what? It's funny. When this movie like was going, you know, progressing through, and they started like falling for each other, I thought, oh man, this means there's genuine hope for Chief and Cortana.
Hey-o.
Well, we'll see in the fifth game.
Yeah, we will.
We had some other movies that we briefly just mentioned. We didn't all see them. I just saw Wolf of Wall Street last night, and
I really want to see that.
Dear God, was that a vulgar...
Paul said he walked out of it.
Yeah,
I could see why. I liked it, though, because I'm fine with all that. But there was so much cocaine, hookers, like, you name it, like, sex, just all over the place. And it was really entertaining, really funny, way too long. It was 3 hours.
Wow.
Way too long. And some of the editing... they were trying to do this like really cool style, which they pulled off sometimes, but then other times they were just like jumping around way too much. And
was it like the slow fast thing, or what was it?
Yeah, it would like what are the other like I don't know if people saw Hot Fuzz.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
Like great. Those like quick like he's gonna make milk and it's like,
it's like whoosh,
like open
yeah
like at you in your face
yeah.
type
oh,
of stuff.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But even some of the things where there are like two people talking, they would randomly like switch like perspectives strangely, and then like you could tell like the audio wasn't matching up with like the back, like you could just see the side of their face
continuity
where they're not talking about what they're actually what you're hearing. So but I'd recommend it if you're okay with seeing a lot of drugs and tits and partying.
Who's the
it was really funny though.
Yeah. Who's the supporting actor in it? What's his name again?
What's his face? It's the one guy
from Superbad.
Yeah.
That one guy.
21 Jump Street.
Yeah. In a lot of stuff.
He
and also a SNL parody of her called Me.
Did he get a nominated?
I think he did. He only did the movie for $60,000, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, he did a really good job. There was
would accept a $60,000 salary if I got to work with Martin Scorsese.
You'd also have to be really
Leonardo DiCaprio. Did anybody see the SNL thing? His opening that he did
for her, or the one where?
No, he was on SNL.
He does an SNL skit of her,
a parody.
Oh, I just watched his monologue. The opening monologue, and he had Leo come out.
Oh, I saw
that was really
too.
Funny.
Yeah.
Nice,
because they did a Titanic thing. But that's nice. No, it had really good character acting. Just My favorite actually was Matthew McConaughey was in it in the beginning.
Does he take off a shirt?
He's a no. He's like a stockbroker.
What?
And that like taught him how to get going a little bit. Mm. But they have this like lunch, and he just goes off, and because he's just on cocaine. And
I wonder how many funny movies Matthew McConaughey's in where he doesn't take off his shirt, because it's like a thing that he does in almost every single movie.
Well, not this one.
Oh, interesting.
So anyway, also a preview for Her was Edge of Tomorrow, the new Tom Cruise movie, which just looks so damn cool to me.
Like Groundhog Day meets Elysium.
Something like that. Anyway.
Sort of.
I know Tom Cruise is like always Tom Cruise in his movies. He looks the same. He acts generally the same.
I like Tom Cruise. A lot of people don't like him.
I do
him,
too. I don't have a problem with him.
Oh my God. This movie, the trailer looks so cool. The special effects, like just like at the beginning of the trailer where you're in the ship with him and he's in the suit and you're getting ready to drop. Like that felt so intense. Like intensity from like Saving Private Ryan or something. And the music.
Like, I liked the music.
Yeah. It's like something out of Portal. Like the robotic voice, this is not the end. And it's just like so sad. And you're like, what is going on?
I thought Battle of Los Angeles was going like,
to. Yeah.
Because that voice.
That was a similar style of music.
Exactly.
Too. I really like that. Not a very good movie, but.
The soundtrack.
The trailer was cool.
The sounds were amazing in that movie.
I like that they didn't really give away a whole lot. I mean, they kind of gave you a taste. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that there's a lot that's probably could be spoiled for this movie. And deeper. I'm glad.
That I love Emily Blunt, too.
Yeah,
But like Oblivion, I feel like they gave away too much in the trailer for that.
Yeah,
yeah, and I feel like too much. It's like that, and I think there's actually like almost a petition of movie theater owners saying that they need to cut their trailers better. There's another movie I saw a trailer for. It's a movie called The Fault in Our Stars. If anyone here knows the Vlog Brothers John Green, the author, he's a best-selling New York Times best-selling author, and he wrote this book, and it's about a girl who has like leukemia or something where. You know, she may die, and you know it's sort of a teen love story kind of thing. And I saw and I watched it because, like as I said, this John Green, the author, is also one of the Vlog Brothers on YouTube, who are these pretty famous, well known vloggers. They also do VidCon, the big YouTube thing, was them who started that, and they do have a whole ton of other stuff they do. But with that trailer, like it's the same thing. Like. I think I know the whole movie now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's kind of pointless.
I love how South Park parodies that. They're like, Stan Marsh was a kid doing this, blah, blah, blah. But now he's about to find out.
Oh, no, it wasn't him. It was the other guy.
Well, no, I know. Rob Schneider. He doesn't.
Oh, yeah, Rob Schneider. Yeah.
But he also, the same guy also comes back in a different episode and doesn't Stan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rob Schneider's about to become a stapler. Anyway.
So, yeah, it looks like the director for Edge of Tomorrow is the same one that did Born Identity, the first one, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and Jumper. And then he had one in 2010 called Fair Game.
I wish Jumper was better. That one. It was
well, the main actor was a kind of a problem.
The actors, the teen actors weren't very good.
Right. But anyway, this movie looks pretty badass.
It's probably going to be our pick for when that comes out.
Some of the scenes with the, I don't know what they call them, but assisted exoskeletons.
Yeah.
Like, it looked a little funky. Mm-hmm. Some of the more computer-generated scenes looked better because they could make it actually move correctly.
I think part of that is, well, he says in the trailer, I'm not a soldier, so I feel like he's having trouble adjusting to the suit. Because the female looks like really agile in it.
Yeah,
and as the trailer progresses, it almost like alludes to and you can see this in the trailer, so this isn't really a spoiler, but it seems like there's some kind of Groundhog Day effect going on when it keeps resetting. So it looks like the same thing, like he gets better and better as a soldier with each iteration.
In the trailer, woman says, I'll come here every day, I'll train you.
Yeah. Mm. It's obviously much deeper because it's about them. Because they're being able to do that because of the aliens, like their powers or something.
He's an anomaly. Isn't he an anomaly? Like something, like he...
Stop giving away stuff about it.
No, it's something with the aliens and kind of like Ender's Game where he had the connection with the queen type of thing. I'm just guessing.
Oh my God.
We need to see it then, Wade.
Yeah, you get. Well,
you didn't read the book.
You don't have to.
It's good.
Moving on.
So the last thing we had to talk about is a very important thing that's coming up in a month or so. Whenever it is the Oscars.
March 2nd.
My favorite night of the year. Yay.
You know, I've actually
invited to my Oscar party.
More than usual, I've seen a lot of angry posts about films that aren't even up for anything when they definitely
should. I think that there were a lot of people that were saying there were a couple of Oscar snubs.
going on for this show. Here, just real quick here, I have, so here are all the nominations for Best Picture, which are American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street. Like that's what's going up for there. For like for lead actor, we got Christian Bale, Bruce Dern, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Captain Phillips
from 12 Years a Slave. Oh. No, not that guy. Okay. And Matthew McConaughey. There.
For best actor.
Yeah, those are best actors.
Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, and best actor. Where's best actress?
Best actresses: Amy Adams, Judi Dench, Meryl Streep, Kate Blanchett, and Sandra Bullock.
That's gonna be Meryl Streep again.
So like, Meryl I don't Streep. Actually like her very much. Her acting, because
you didn't like her in The Devil Wears Prada.
She was wonderful in The Devil Wears Prada. It's a great. I don't care what anybody says. That's
what's the other girl's name? In there,
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. I like her. She's awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she won for Les Mis.
Yeah.
Yep.
Has Leo won?
Nope. And that is an ongoing issue the politics of the Oscars.
And Christian Bale hasn't won lead, right? But supporting for that boxing movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, no, and with DiCaprio, it's this whole thing. It's like there's all the inner politics of the Oscars where, like, you know, if you don't play the game, you don't get to win.
Yeah, it's kind like of thing. You have to really market.
And Scorsese, too, right?
Yeah, Scorsese. Yeah. But it's also different because Scorsese goes to the Oscars. I think a lot of time DiCaprio does not.
Mm-hmm.
I think even sometimes when he's been nominated, he doesn't go.
So you don't think he's going to win?
It is very clear that the general... Because you know the way the Academy, the way you vote is basically you can be a member of the Academy and which is probably tens of thousands of people, and you can put in your votes for the nominations.
Mm-hmm.
Then the final nomination. So then there you have the nominees list, which is what's here, and then the like I don't know the board of the Academy, the higher ups, they'd make the final choice. So well, it's a thing where I don't know if they're anonymous. I don't think they are.
Hmm.
But you know with that one, it's clear that the general voting members. Want Leonardo DiCaprio to win because he's been nominated so many bloody times.
Yeah.
But it's clear that something is not—they're not clicking with the board.
I think it's cool that at first it's really kind of democratic. Like Honest Playground, for example, that made its round in a lot of different film festivals, and there are certain film festivals that are sanctioned by the Academy, and if it places at those sanctioned festivals, then it's like in the running, and then it goes from there through a selection process.
Yeah.
Did anybody else see American Hustle?
Yeah.
No.
Besides me, you saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Would you?
It was good.
General
I mean,
thoughts on
definitely liked it. It's not my kind of movie, though.
Yeah,
but everyone was really good, and it was you know well shot and directed. It's just you know, like I like stories that are more about you know personal discovery, and that's more just like a you know crime American thriller awesome. Drama
scenario.
Okay, so real quick, like the visual effects one. So like for visual effects, we have Gravity, The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug, Iron Man 3, The Lone Ranger, and Star Trek Into Darkness. The Lone Ranger was a crappy movie, and I thought the effects were really bad on it, too. So I don't know what that's doing in there. Well,
there are some people are saying that Gravity should have been an animated film. Like, that should what it should have been listed as.
Nah.
Nah.
Yeah.
I can see that justification.
So much better.
Speaking of animated, it's strange that Pixar's isn't up this year.
They do.
Monsters U. It's not up for best
isn't it?
Animated feature. Not that it would win against Frozen. I don't think it would. I think Frozen might take away this one.
Well, that's the one that they do together, right? Isn't there a movie that Disney and Pixar do each year together?
Supposedly, Pixar doesn't have one coming out this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, Pixar does one. Disney owns them, so it's probably Disney.
Yeah, it's a weird
Disney.
Thing.
Yeah, because Frozen is Disney, so yeah.
Well, the one
they help each other out a lot.
The one that I want to see that I don't think it's been released in the United States yet, which is The Wind Rises, which is Hayao Miyazaki's final film. It's his final one. It's about the designer of the Japanese Zero plane.
Oh, cool.
And I've heard like a lot of people say that it is a gorgeously stunning and a fantastic ending to his career. There's a lot of other people that are accusing it of being sensationalism isn't the right word, but it's like, oh, look, like, you know, because it has to do with the war, with World War II. And it's like, oh, it's him glorifying like the Japanese people and like as if they didn't do anything wrong. It's like, oh, there were hundreds of war crimes attributed to you. It's like
we did stuff
like,
wrong too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, and it's like that's not the point. That's not the point of this movie. It's not trying to glorify. It's
I think it's going to be a fascinating film.
Cool.
You don't really know where to go. Like from that.
They actually, the theaters in Uptown, I was going to suggest that we go. One theater is doing all the short films. All the nominated ones, they just do it a big group.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you just go. Theater, right?
And then the other one, the Lagoon one, they have one for the animated shorts.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
So if you guys are interested in that.
Yeah, we should definitely try and do that.
If you can. I'm kind
of, because I don't usually get to see any of the, I don't look online for like the short films, the live action ones.
Yeah, and those are the ones that are something it's really hard to find them.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. In those the smaller categories. The same with the documentary ones, both the documentary and the documentary short subject. It can be so hard to find a place to watch those.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of documentaries in theaters.
Yeah. You really, really have to go out of your way to either like the really small side theaters or, you know, find it on Netflix or Hulu or wherever.
Well, we'll probably be talking next month about the winners and.
Oh, we will.
We will. We still have to pick one, a movie that we're all going to see for next time, but yeah. It's coming out.
I don't know. That's a good question.
We'll figure it out.
What's coming out?
Oh, we don't know yet.
What?
We're for a movie to watch. Next time.
Well, apparently it doesn't have to be this in the month, according to Wade.
I just think in theaters. I mean, come on, guys.
I thought there was a movie coming out this
next I'm sure month. There's something.
Oh, you guys, Frozen Sing Along. Let's go see that.
Then there's all this awkward silence as everyone's like frantically typing on their laptops to try and find like what's coming out.
The Lego movie?
Yes.
So, like, I kind of want to see that.
Yeah. I was super disappointed about something about that film.
It's not going to be that great, but...
I was actually surprised about how well they pulled it off, but now I'm disappointed about it. It is not a stop-motion film.
I told you it wasn't.
Well, I mean,
I thought it was.
Well, no, because the reason why
I really don't.
Oh, come on, Lee.
If you look,
that's why I wanted to see it, was the stop-motion.
Me too, because one thing they like did... Caroline. Two things which led me to believe it was stop-motion is, one... There was like the plastic seams on the minifigures, like as if they were molded. Like you'd see like along the back of the arm, you can see where the mold line was. And also the characters were all obeying the physics of the character. So like in other Lego animated films, like they'll bend at the elbows or bend at the knees. For this one, it's all the same blocky movement that the Lego figures are capable of. So I'm like, this is so cool that they're doing a stop motion Lego film.
Well, okay.
And now it's not. It's 3D. Well, so I was like,
David,
well,
let me ask you this. When you saw the trailer, did you think it was stop motion?
Yes.
Then what's the difference?
It's not.
Well, who cares?
Film and digital, maybe.
It's the work and the craftsmanship that goes
Lee,
into it.
You sit here and you argue that, the orcs that are CG, that's fine. I don't care. It's better than prosthetic. And then you turn around and say, the CG isn't good enough for Legos.
The story isn't, like, it's probably not that great. So I would have enjoyed it more if I know the craftsmanship was there.
But maybe the story's good.
Maybe, but
I probably will see it. Well, but we'll see.
Let's see what the ratings are.
Nothing looks. RoboCop looks stupid. I don't want to see that.
There is the Miyazaki film.
There's Pompeii.
I don't want to see Pompeii. That looks dumb.
Paul Anderson.
It looks like another.
Well, guys,
bloody...
maybe we can.
So that does have Jon Snow in it.
Guys, how about we can see a dumb movie and talk about
it? Oh, I know. I got it. I got a great one.
Done.
No. I got a good one. We should see The Monuments Men.
No. I don't want
to
at all.
Yes, that looks so good.
I did not,
George Clooney, Matt Damon,
like
Bill Murray,
trailer.
John Goodman.
That trailer was really
I thought it was bad, too.
Weird.
I usually love World War II movies. And
oh,
I
that's
going to
be
War
so
II
good.
Movies.
That's a
directed by George Clooney.
Yeah.
Oh, another one that's coming out that might be interesting, though it may be hard to see, is called
Vampire Academy?
After the Dark. It's an interesting one. It's about this class of students, and they're doing a thought experiment about the apocalypse. Yeah,
and they turn into vampires.
Yes.
Thank you, Lee. Moving on, then. Oh, how about Nurse 3D?
All right, guys. Well, how about this? For a situation like this, we can all like submit a vote and
nonstop.
Then we can go from there.
We just roll die.
It's basically just a kidnap movie, just a different scenario.
Which one?
Nonstop.
Oh, you guys, 3 Days to Kill looks like the worst thing I've ever seen.
I think like in the future when we have more viewers and we have more feedback, we'd have them vote for the next movie we watch.
leave the internet
that's,
in charge
well,
of voting.
Well,
that always ends
that,
well.
That's for
time.
Something like a
how no did offense,
like,
internet.
That's for something like a How Did This Get Made podcast where it's just about like a movie.
I love that podcast.
Sure.
Yeah. I got it.
But
I know what film we're going to watch next month.
What is it?
Son of God.
Yeah. This major motion picture event, an experience created to be shared among families and communities around the U.S., brings the story of Jesus' life to audience through compelling cinematic storytelling that is both powerful and inspirational.
It bothers me so much that Jesus does not look Arabic.
Well, that's every Jesus movie.
That reminds me. What do you guys think of a Noah movie?
That is dumb too.
Which Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah.
He's made good
Emma
stuff.
Emma Watson.
Russell Crowe.
I would see that.
Emma Watson.
Yeah.
Lee, I would
Emma
see
Watson.
That.
Emma Watson. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Let's not write it off because Darren Aronofsky is a good director.
That would be an interesting one. I'd be curious to hear more about it.
Okay.
But anyway, we will let you guys know. Well, you'll be back next time.